Hi, everyone, and welcome to American Girl Unboxed, the podcast where we dive deep into the stories, styles, crafts, and snacks of the American girls we grew up with. I'm Grace, and today we're starting with none other than Samantha Parkington. Joining me to talk about the book today is Victor, and later we'll have Katie on to discuss the dolls and extras. We're going to start with a little peek into the past, if you will. Victor, if you had to guess a candy that was around during Samantha's time and is still around today, what would you think that would be?
So this was early 1900s. Yes. I would imagine it would have to be some form of like taffy.
So I didn't look into all the candies, so perhaps those were around during the time, but that's not what I grabbed for us to eat today. I was reading through the 2001 American Girl magazine, and they randomly had a spread about candies throughout the ages, and the early 1900s was one thing they talked about, and they named two candies that you can still get today, so I thought I would buy them and we could try them and eat them.
Yes,
here.
Let's go.
You've probably had both. I honestly don't think one of them I don't think I've tried.
Excellent. Let's dive in together. I've been so curious what was in that bag too, so I can't wait to see.
I was trying to keep it top secret. Okay, so the first are Tootsie Rolls.
No way. Tootsie Rolls.
Tootsie Rolls.
So they're that old?
They are that old. They were around. Samantha could have been eating some Tootsie Rolls back in her day. And then the other one, this is
still
the one
holding
that
strong.
This is the other one I don't think I have ever tried. And that is, how do you even say this?
Oh my gosh. Necco wafers, N-E-C-C-O, right?
Yes.
Okay. Those are amazing. I think there's very strong opinions that people either really like those or really don't. I haven't met a person that's like, meh, they're all right, or like somewhere in the middle.
I think either I haven't had them or I hate them. It's one of those two. Because like I'm thinking in my head, I don't like them. But I'm going to try them right now. Well, you can probably have all of, I'll probably have one and you can have the rest.
You can have the rest of the Tootsie Rolls.
Perfect. It does say on here since 1847. So actually, well before Samantha's time.
And that's exactly how they taste too. They're just very dry.
Chalky.
They're chalky.
Dust.
Yeah, dust. Yep.
Okay, I have a white one. Victor has a green one. Cheers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they taste like? They taste very similar to the candy hearts that you get at Valentine's
Day.
Yes,
and I love those, and I love these. Whatever magic chalk that creates this chalky candy, I need to know where so I can like either grow it myself or just, you know, always have enough of it.
Well, you can be the one to water that patch of candy.
Whatever.
Because
yeah,
it's not going to be me.
Yeah.
But yeah, here are the rest of the roll.
Oh my gosh,
you are welcome to eat them.
You just made my day.
And then let's eat a Tootsie Roll.
Okay. Yeah.
It's hard to talk with these. Tootsie Rolls always make me think of my mom. She loves these. And I like them. To me, it's like one of the lesser candies, but I will always eat them.
Yeah, I definitely love Tootsie Rolls because there's just like real soft chocolate. Like not super soft, but like soft enough where like you're not, you know, breaking your jaw chewing on it for so long. Although if you put a lot in your mouth, I'm sure that would probably start to wear and tear. But I like and then going into maybe like the other flavors too as well, you know, like the blue,
vanilla ones,
butterscotch, yes,
are so good.
Yes,
I didn't know they had a butterscotch one. That sounds delicious.
Amazing.
But I love the vanilla one. I do have an important question for you.
Okay.
If you had to classify this candy, does it go into chocolate candies? Like if you're like, hey, if I said to you, Victor, I'm craving chocolate, can you go get me some candy with chocolate candy?
First off, this would not be the first. This would not be my first go-to. But yes, I would classify it as chocolate.
Okay. Interesting.
But it would be very like low-tiered chocolate.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like if I had
there's
to
no real, I don't know if there's any real chocolate in it. Like it's like chocolate flavored. Just like, okay.
Oh.
Would you consider a strawberry sucker?
Right, a strawberry.
Right.
No.
But it is chocolate flavored. I know. It's tricky.
Yeah, because it's not. Yeah, it's just like a chocolate flavored taffy.
Yeah, kind of.
You just like blew my mind with that because I never really thought about, you know, whether it's chocolate or not. But yeah, you're right. It's not chocolate.
I know. I haven't been able to sleep since thinking about that question, but. Okay, and in addition to the candy, I did grab a couple more facts from the time period that I got from the book Samantha's World, which if you're unfamiliar, there were some books released that were essentially the like every historical book has a peek into the past in the back that goes through actual history from that time period. And there's these books, Welcome to Blank's World, that were a book of just that, basically. And they're really cool. They have colored pictures in them and stuff. And so from that book, I grabbed two facts to share today. Both are about things that make people go. They're things that you can travel in. So the first one is about the New York City subway. It was, in fact, built in 1904.
That's amazing. I would have thought it would have been built maybe slightly after that. Like 1904 for a subway. I could see a train that's on land being that old, but not a subway. Subway I would have thought was like, I don't know, World War II or later.
Right. I actually was thinking the same. I was like, that seems like 1940s for some reason.
Seems too modern almost for 1904 to be underground.
Yeah, but good for them for building that, because obviously super helpful to have when you're in New York.
Right.
And then the other one is that in 1903, so a year before Meet Samantha was set, is when Orville Wright made the first successful flight aboard an aircraft. He glided across the sand dunes of Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. So
nice.
On the verge, on the cusp of having the
planes and trains.
Yeah. The gift of flight. So Samantha, you are in for a treat in a little while. You can fly. All right. So now we're going to dive into the book. The first chapter starts with Samantha falling out of a tree. Her neighbor, Eddie, starts teasing her about not knowing how to climb. Samantha gets rid of him by threatening to sneak his beetle collection into the church offering plate and then blaming it on him. Afterward, she runs upstairs to the sewing room to find Jesse. Jesse scolds her lightly, calling her a ragamuffin, which is such a great word. But she agrees to fix Samantha's torn stocking. And Jesse is someone who clearly works in the house because she is in the sewing room sewing. What were your first impressions? Like, this is your first historical American Girl book you've ever read. So reading those first few pages, like initial impressions, illustration, story, like what were you thinking?
Yeah. So for me, Samantha, her entrance felt kind of almost iconic of her falling out of a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Where, and I don't know, is Samantha popular? Is she a popular American
girl? Oh my goodness. I'm glad you asked, because she is the girl. She's
really?
Like the it girl. Yes. She's okay. the most popular, I would
Interesting.
Say.
Well, okay. And I can definitely understand why, having read the story.
Mm-hmm.
But my initial thoughts coming in as far as, you know, Samantha, was that it was a very cool entrance of like just how it was written, where it's like, oh, like it was like, I think it was written as like a bunch of or a collection of arms and legs suddenly falling from a tree. I thought was really cool. But I was getting very strong, a very strong presence that wasn't overtly silly. It was almost like a very defiant personality that wasn't afraid to tussle with the boys, that you had to respect. You knew that she was something to not be messed with, because she could hold herself well, I think, in any crowd.
And I'm glad you say that, because I feel like as time goes on and maybe people grow up and kind of forget her stories, all they remember about her is that she was like this rich white girl, right? And that, I think, forget that she did have a lot of character, and she wasn't just some prissy kind of spoiled brat, because she's not, in my opinion.
No. And I'm glad I did not go into it either thinking that. I mean, just reading kind of like the intro summary, she's an orphan living with her grandmother. So it's like, okay, yeah, she has a very wealthy grandmother, and she's certainly privileged. You know, she can't call mom and dad with any of her problems. And I think that that's something that, you know, greatly outweigh any monetary privilege.
Yeah,
you know,
she's got her hardships.
The lack of parental. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so Samantha is in the room with Jesse. She sighs and says how it must be awfully boring to be a grown-up. Jesse gives her a wise answer, and she says it depends on the person. Samantha doesn't think her uncle's friend Cornelia is bored, because she's pretty, dark-haired, and laughs a lot. It's clear that Samantha likes Cornelia, but she secretly wishes her uncle Guard would marry someone more exciting, like Alice Roosevelt.
Can I just say that was a part that stuck out to me?
Mm.
Because I had no idea who Alice Roosevelt was.
Oh.
I knew She was the president's daughter, and I could assume it was Teddy Roosevelt's daughter, but I knew nothing of her. I knew Teddy had a bunch of kids, but can I just share some of the quick facts that I found about her? Because I have them written down and prepared.
I would love that.
I wanted to surprise you, yes. So I was like, hold on. And before I like continued reading, I was like, no, Alice Roosevelt, I have to Google this and see what I know. I knew nothing. I knew that she was a daughter, and that was it. I got Teddy Roosevelt correct.
Good job.
I knew it wasn't FDR.
Franklin, yeah.
So Alice Roosevelt, incredibly interesting figure in U.S. history. So Alice Roosevelt, at this time, she's about 20 years old because she was born February 12th, 1884, died February 20th, 1980. She lived for a very long time, and she, I think, lived through probably a crazy lifespan. She saw so much.
Yeah.
From 1884 to 1980, that's astonishing. So Samantha references the president's daughter, who Alice Roosevelt, at that time, I think, from what I can remember, his presidency started in 1901. She's quickly started becoming a huge presence in like the social world as far as her at different parties, different events. She was basically almost like a grown-up version of the Samantha that I initially thought of.
Oh.
Because this was someone who was basically very unconventional and controversial for her time.
Mm-hmm.
So she was the president's daughter, eldest daughter to Teddy Roosevelt, and the only daughter to his prior wife, who died I think 2 days after she was born. But so she grew up very unconventional, controversial, if you will, for those times, right? Because she had her own ideas and thoughts. And you know, I thought, okay, so number one, if this is who she wants Uncle Gardner to like get with, I'm curious and know a little bit more about Uncle Gardner, because he probably, you know, is at that period for a man to be able to stand aside that, I think is amazing. And so he has to be a great guy. But she was definitely a force to be reckoned with. She was has been quoted of saying some pretty amazing thing. So here are just a few things that I found. So when Alice was 15 years old and her dad was governor of New York, she was such a troublemaker that her dad and stepmom threatened to send her to a very conservative, disciplined-oriented school in New York City. And Alice wrote her parents the following threat: "If you send me, I will humiliate you. I will do something that will shame you. I tell you, I will."
It kind of reminds me of the threats that Samantha makes toward Eddie.
Right.
Like, they're pretty good.
Like, they're short, to the point, but meaningful and impactful. Like, you don't hear the lack of words in this threat as like, oh, she's faking it. Like, oh no, she said what she said and as quickly as she could, and she means it. So speaking of kind of like her trend setting, she became very popular in social spaces. People loved her. She was like almost like the first rock star of like, you know, White House children. So a year after her father became president in 1901, teenaged Alice made her social debut wearing a gown in a gray blue color that became so popular it became known to this day as Alice Blue.
Oh, okay. Isn't that fun? To Google this to see what this Alice Blue looks like.
Yeah.
Okay, that is a very pretty shade of blue.
Yeah, and she wore that and people loved it, and suddenly it became the it color. Another fun Alice Roosevelt fact: at all times, she kept a garter snake in her pocket she called Emily Spinach.
I like that name.
Didn't I know, right?
Clearly has a sense of humor with that.
She became so popular that the White House needed to hire a secretary just to handle all her fan mail.
Oh my goodness.
Right.
She was this quite is the character.
This was the personality that, yes, is Alice Roosevelt, that I think inspired Samantha.
Well, and poor Cornelia, because that's a lot to live up to if like that's Cornelia. What Samantha wants
my
for
goodness,
her
Cornelia,
uncle.
Had you only known.
So Samantha is still in the room with Jesse, and she asks her if Jesse knew her parents, but Jesse gently reminds her that the boat accident happened when Samantha was five, the boat accident that we can infer killed her parents.
Yep.
And that Jesse didn't start to work for Grand Mary until Samantha was seven. Samantha had known that, but she was hoping for some stories, and she touches the locket that has her parents' picture in it, wishing she could hear more about them. Instead, Jessie shares stories about New Orleans, where her husband Lincoln works as a porter, and then the chapter ends with Jessie telling these stories, which clearly mean a lot to Samantha. In chapter 2, Samantha spends her usual 4 o'clock sewing with Grand Mary, who's very proper and elegant. Samantha thinks she looks just like a queen. While working on her sampler, which reads, "Actions speak louder than words," Samantha brings up a doll she's seen and asks if she can have it. But Grand Mary tells her it's too expensive. It costs $6, which would be around $200 today. I will say that a little caveat there, I did get that from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which only goes back to, like, I think 1913. So it's not exact, but that's why I think it said a little bit less than 200, but I rounded up just to kind of factor in the fact that there was like a 9-year difference.
So it's roughly in between a customized American Girl and a fresh off the box American Girl today.
Yeah.
Cost-wise.
Good. Yes. Good. Good way to put it. And that might have, I wonder if that was a little strategic too, from the company's point of view, right? To say like, oh, look at this nice
about $6
job
back then, and that it was totally doable. So gotta respect it. That. Yeah.
Yeah. So Samantha insists that she could earn the money by doing things like making boomerangs to sell, which shocks Grand Mary.
Yes.
And Grand Mary tells Samantha that proper young ladies don't earn money. And so according to the peek in the past in the back of the book, someone like Samantha wouldn't be expected to make a bed or dry dishes or do any work. And it was actually considered improper for her to work at all, even as an adult.
Yeah.
Cornelia's role in the book or in the series is that she sort of challenges these ideas, and Samantha fires back to Grand Mary that Cornelia says women should earn money, and Grand Mary is not amused and says Cornelia ought to keep her ideas to herself.
Yes, and this is coming from the mother of the son Cornelia married in Gardner, right?
They're not married.
Oh, but they're together.
Yes. Well, okay. I think Samantha just refers to Cornelia as Uncle Gard's friend.
Yep. Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes. But when I read that, I was like, hey, Samantha, maybe she's a little bit more like Alice than you think.
Oh, totally. Cornelia
because
is
she's
awesome.
Clearly not in this old traditional, you know, old styled view of what a woman can and can't do like Grand Mary is.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll see more of Cornelia throughout the series, so just to keep an eye out for her. But Samantha softens the moment by saying that she would name her doll Lydia after her mother because the doll reminds her of her mom. That gets through to Grand Mary a bit, and Grand Mary says Samantha can earn the doll, but only by excelling at tasks like piano and sewing. Samantha agrees, though she makes no promises about stopping her teasing of Eddie Ryland, the neighbor.
She comes just short of mentioning that part.
Later, Uncle Gard and Cornelia arrive in his car. Grand Mary doesn't want Samantha to go for a ride. It might ruin her clothes. Also, she could have been worried about Samantha's safety because at this time, there were no traffic signals or stop signs yet, so drivers often ran into each other.
Wow. That's scary to even think about. Now, I know that they weren't going super fast, but they were still going fast enough, I think, that
You
run into each other. I mean, and with the cars made then to what they are now, like, you have very little protection.
Right. I'm sure there was a lot of bad accidents that happened.
That's why I love when Grand Mary kind of described it as like, oh, you brought all this noise to this neighborhood, because it was probably like the first car to come down that street maybe in a while. Like, they weren't just everywhere like they are today.
Exactly. Yeah. Cornelia. So, and that's probably too, I think Samantha wants to ride it so bad, right? Because it's like new and exciting.
Oh, yeah.
And Cornelia does offer Samantha her duster. So then Grand Mary finally agrees that Samantha can go. As they're leaving, they find Eddie messing around in the car. I don't know if I would trust to get into that car after seeing him mess around.
Eddie is bad news.
Just before they drive off, Eddie blurts out that a 9-year-old girl named Nellie is going to be living with them soon. Big news that takes Samantha by surprise. The chapter ends with Samantha riding off with Uncle Gard.
Which, to kind of close off, I think I have to say Uncle Gard.
I think full name Gardner.
Yeah, Uncle Gard and Cornelia seem like a very young, professional, hip couple. that would, like, I could see why Samantha just, like, would flock or gravitate towards them. They remind me a lot of, like, those cool uncles that would come for holidays or that you would just be so excited about because you're like, oh, my gosh, tell me about, I don't know, anything. And you would just basically eat it all up. Like, I just thought, like, another iconic entrance, if you will, where, like, they're just like, okay, who are these two cool people?
I know. And they remain great characters throughout the series.
Really?
And one thing I don't know if they'll... I haven't reread these since I was a kid, but... One thing I'm wondering, maybe they'll reveal, I know he is Samantha's mom's brother, and I don't know if they mentioned the age difference, because I just picture Uncle Guard to be so young, and I imagine Samantha's mom couldn't possibly be as young as I picture Uncle Guard. So I don't know how old he is, but I picture them being, like you said, like young, cool, hip.
Yeah, they would have to be around probably, I would imagine, like early 20s.
Yeah, because back then, I would assume it would be more typical for a woman like Cornelia to be married by the time that she's like mid to late 20s, I would guess.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I would agree. Early 20s. Who knows, though? I mean, it might say. But, okay, let's go into chapter 3. Samantha finishes her daily hour of piano practice and heads outside with a gingerbread cookie. She crawls into her secret tunnel, a little worn path through the lilac hedge between her yard and Eddie's. On the other side, she spots a girl hanging laundry. The girl is pale, thin, and looks younger than the age of 9. Samantha introduces herself and finds out that the girl is Nellie, the one Eddie mentioned, and that she's not visiting, but actually working for the Rylands. Samantha is surprised, but excited at the chance of making a new friend. She offers her cookie, but Nellie politely refuses, saying that she has chores to finish. Samantha insists she calls her Samantha and not Miss, and offers to help with the laundry so they can play together after. Nellie is embarrassed and hurries to finish, so Samantha pulls her into the hedge tunnel where no one can see and gives her the cookie. They talk, and Nellie explains that her dad works in a factory in the city, and her mom does laundry, but with 3 kids, there wasn't enough money for food or coal. So Nellie started working. The Rylands pay her $1 a week, which would be about $30 today, again, according to BLS from 1913 data. It's less than she earned in the factory, but at least the air is clean, and she gets decent meals. Samantha is shocked to learn Nellie doesn't go to school. Right then and there, she decides she will teach Nellie herself. They'll meet at the tunnel every day. The girls start laughing and talking until Eddie finds them and, of course, starts teasing. He calls them ugly and threatens to tell, but Samantha shuts him down by threatening to fill his new pocket knife with taffy. Oh, there you go, taffy.
Ooh, I knew, there's always taffy, right? Like, that's just like something that was made. It's almost it's like almost America's pastime as far as candy.
So you, even though that was one of the candies I bought, you were totally right that taffy was around. Good job. That you must have remembered that little nugget.
Yeah, probably from some. Well, I don't know if it was from this story, but I just find taffy to be old.
Yeah, I agree.
Through just maybe other references.
I do like it though.
Love it.
Okay. Oh, Eddie runs off, but Nellie gets nervous and goes back to work. Samantha reassures her, promising to make a telephone out of tin cans so they can always talk through the hedge no matter what. I don't know about you, but I was a little bit stressed during this whole scene thinking, is Samantha going to get this poor girl in trouble? She just arrived. It's like her first day. Yeah. And like Samantha's like distracting her from her job. And like, not to say that a 9-year-old shouldn't be able to play and stuff, but like just being realistic, I was worried that if Eddie's parents are anything like him, they would not look too kindly on this situation.
No, I can definitely see that. For me, you know, I love this chapter. Meeting Nellie was grounding in a way. I think Samantha really represents almost the imaginative ideals of a young person. And Nellie really represents the real, more grounded realism that a tough life brings, where it's you don't have the fortune to dream up of what you're going to do tomorrow. I'm going to go to the beach or I'm going to go shopping. It's like, no, you're going to show up to work and make sure you bring that money to your family. One quote that really stuck out to me in this chapter that I thought was incredibly powerful. She was good at imagining castles and jungles and sailing ships, but she had never imagined hunger and cold. That was a very jarring statement to read.
Yeah.
Because the book, the way it started out was just so fun, friendly, you know, and with some hijinks.
Yeah.
And then I think Nellie's character coming in just kind of brought it back to just a more grounded realism is the best way that I can describe it. You know, this is someone who worked in a factory prior to, and again, she's probably like, what, 9, 10 years old, which
nine,
like
yeah.
kids of that age working in a factory is insane to even think about, and not making very much, now working for the Rylands, no schooling. It was very humbling, especially when you put it right next to this like ball of energy that Samantha is.
Yeah. She has the privilege to be a ball of energy because she doesn't have to worry about all these things Nellie does.
Now, what I have to really like, and another reason why like this chapter I really enjoyed, was it gave us a different side to Samantha's personality. So initially, this is someone that is basically going to be adventurous, stand up for herself or stand up for others, you know, or that, you know, she is like, because like you mentioned, some people might look at Samantha's character as someone who's very, you know, privileged, not very nuanced, but I think in what her desire to, well, number one, I think at that moment she did realize like, oh, wait, I don't really know as much as I think I do. This girl right here, what do you mean she can't just meet with me tomorrow in the afternoon? We're kids, we're supposed to play. Like, no, she's working. Well, she took it upon herself to say, listen, we're going to meet every day in this tunnel to, and I'm going to teach you everything, knowing that she didn't have the education that she had. And so I thought, here is this ball of energy that is not just about like, you know, moving and doing stuff, but like she actually wants to have impact or change. And I thought that was very, very cool to read of her. And so Samantha took huge notches up in my, like, I really like Samantha.
I know. I found her very likable throughout the whole book, honestly.
100%. This chapter to me was like, okay. And then moving on, there's going to be other chapters, but yes.
Yeah. So let's move on. Let's go to chapter 4. This one starts with Samantha's usual sewing time with Grammary. But this time it's interrupted when Jessie walks in to say she won't be coming back. Samantha is immediately upset and jumps up to ask why. But Grammary stays calm, simply wishing Jessie well, and gives her a bonus. Grammary doesn't allow any questions, and Samantha is left with no answers. As soon as sewing ends, Samantha runs off to find someone who will talk. She heads straight to the kitchen to find Mrs. Hawkins, the cook. Mrs. Hawkins tells Samantha she looks like thunder, which I specifically wrote down because I thought that was such a vivid way to describe someone.
Yes, I wrote that down as well, too. I'm like, I've never heard that, but that's how I'm going to describe all these people coming up to me, maybe just like with like, oh, these problems. I'll be like, oh, girl, you look like thunder right now.
I know. I want to feel it. And I think this is an example. Like, I'm such a proponent of adults reading children's lit. I refound a love of it when I became a teacher and I would read stuff for my college classes. And it can be so well written, even though it's like for kids. Like, it can have some great lines and turns of phrases. And yes. I think that this book, to me, is very well written. I am enjoying it at this point in the book.
Yeah.
So even Mrs. Hawkins won't give Samantha an answer. She just says, don't you think your Grammary knows best? Unsatisfied, Samantha hurries to the butler's pantry to find Hawkins, the butler, which I'm assuming is her husband. I don't think it's explicitly stated.
You can only assume, right?
Right. Yeah. There, they polish the silver together, and Hawkins tries to reassure Samantha that Jessie will be fine, but again, he avoids the reason for her leaving. Still upset and confused, Samantha leaves and passes Grammary in the hallway. To her surprise, Grammary actually praises her for how hard she's been working over the past few weeks and tells her there's a surprise waiting upstairs. Samantha races to her room and finds it. The doll she's wanted all along, Lydia, is laying in her bed. Now, there was a part of the peek into the past section that I thought was interesting where it talked about the servants. So it mentioned that servants like Mrs. Hawkins and her husband, again, alleged husband, likely lived in the house that they worked in, and potentially like a tiny attic room.
Yeah.
And they were not supposed to play with the kids or speak to the parents. So we can tell just from this interaction that maybe Grandmary runs her household slightly differently than what the typical wealthy house did at the time.
Yeah, because so far she's kind of giving very cold vibes, like prior to this, where it was like, you know, she's just like a person that of great means that understands this, you know, higher class living of like, these are the rules, this is how you conduct yourself. If anything, she, like, the image that I got of Grand Mary was, do you remember the evil stepmother in Cinderella?
Yeah.
Like, her vibes, but warmer.
Okay.
Friendlier. Like, I don't think she would be like she would actually, like, be, like, smile and cold, but, like, I just, for some reason, thought of her, that cartoon
version. Yeah. She does, I mean, because I think she's described as pretty regal and, like you say, maybe reserved.
Very regal elegance and very true to her social class.
Yes. But I think that these little snippets of, like, Samantha talking to Jesse and talking to the Hawkins, I feel like this kind of shows that maybe, again, like Grand Mary does have a little bit of a warm heart.
100%.
For Samantha to feel emboldened to do that. Yeah,
and that's why I feel like I was so, like, relieved to think, okay, this isn't going to be one of those stories where, like, she is the evil person. Like, no, you know, Samantha, she may not be living with her parents, but she's not stuck with an evil stepmother.
I think it's so fun to hear your perspective because I know that Grand Mary is, like, a cool lady, and so reading this I remembered that, and so I wasn't, like, worried, but it's neat to hear from your point of view that you were a little bit worried, but then we're slowly, like, got to see that she is a good person.
Yeah, thankfully. 100%. I think she's good for Samantha.
Yeah. And let's go into chapter 5 now, where Samantha brings her new doll, Lydia, to the tunnel so Nellie can meet her. But as soon as Nellie sees the doll, Samantha realizes it might have been a little insensitive. Mm. Nellie's never even owned a simple doll before. Still, Samantha lets her play with Lydia, and Nellie is clearly enchanted. Samantha tells her that Jesse left and comes up with the idea that maybe she's off becoming a famous actress. Nellie doesn't respond. She's too busy with a doll. Over the next few days, Samantha keeps imagining reasons why Jesse might have left, but then Nellie quietly suggests that maybe she had a baby.
Now, how perfect to kind of, again, reiterate where each girl is.
Yeah.
They're around the same age, living two very different worlds. If you were to imagine, hey, why is this person leaving? Oh, she's off on the Titanic, like, living the dream, or she's in Vegas now headlining, versus Nellie, who's, you know, isn't as wealthy or isn't as privileged. It's like, no, she's probably having a baby and needs to rest, or, like, have some, like, she came up with, like, a reasonable, plausible, like, actual reason why, hey, this is why she left. She didn't just up and go and chase her dreams, because who does that? And then Samantha's like, well, I guess that makes sense, but just not as fun as my ideas.
I love that you notice that, because I think there's multiple times throughout the book where they show that difference between Samantha and Nellie. Yeah. And again, to me, this is great writing because they're showing and not telling over and over.
Yes.
So back to the conversation between Nellie and Samantha. The idea that Jesse could be pregnant stuns Samantha, and the girls realize that adults just don't talk about those kinds of things. Samantha's disappointed. It's not as exciting as the theater. She wants to find out the truth, and Nellie, who ran an errand for the Rylands earlier, reveals that she actually knows where Jesse lives. So she had run an errand in that part of town where Jesse lives, and she says, oh, hey, I can get us there. So they come up with a plan to sneak out at night. Nellie knows that once her chores are done, she won't be missed and they can slip away. The streets near their homes are lit with gas lamps, but once they cross the train tracks, everything changes. The houses are small and plain, and the streets are darker. Samantha asks why Jesse lives there, and Nellie tells her it's the colored part of town. Samantha is shocked. Nellie, in turn, is shocked that Samantha didn't know.
Yeah, so this was another part where it was just very similar to the prior experience of Samantha, you know, speculating where Jesse went. Her speculations were definitely more fantastical, whereas Nellie's were very grounded in realism. You know, she asks, she's like, she lives here? And, you know, Nellie has to be like, yeah, girl, why are you so dumb, right?
Yeah.
And has to explain to her, like, yeah, this is the colored part of town. And so I enjoyed the part where Samantha, you know, asks Nellie, like, well, why? Why does she have to live here in this part of town? And Nellie, you know, just very sincerely and sweetly responds, I don't know. It's just the way that parents do things or adults do things or something to that effect. And I thought that that was a very sweet moment between them two, where almost their two worlds kind of collided in that instance.
Yeah, it shows that even though Nellie does know more about the world than Samantha, they still have this like naive innocence, right, where they can see the humanity in people.
Yeah, and it was so sweet to read because it really, I think, galvanized their relationship, and it is a very cool bond that continues to evolve.
Yeah. And eventually they do make it to Jesse's house. Nervous, they peek through the window. Nellie climbs onto Samantha's back and spots Jesse with her husband, Lincoln, and a cradle. Jesse sees Nellie's face in the window and screams. Nellie tumbles off, and that's how Lincoln finds them outside, where he immediately starts to laugh. Inside, Jesse melts when she finds out why they came. She introduces them to her baby, Nathaniel. Samantha thinks he's beautiful, and Jesse reassures her that she'll still come visit. But she quickly gets them out the door, worried that they'll all get in trouble if Grand Mary finds out. Lincoln walks them home, and the book doesn't mention this, but I couldn't help but wonder if that would have potentially been risky for a black man to be seen escorting two white girls at night.
Oh my gosh, I can only imagine. Where do they live again? Or do you remember?
I think New York.
Okay, so
like I don't think the city,
hells.
But
well, yeah, because I was gonna say like if it was in the probably more southern states, it would have been more risky. But even then, in the north, I think, well, early 1900s. Who knows? I can't say that I know exactly what.
Yeah, I don't know the time period well enough to know exactly like, if that, but I mean,
I would imagine
hear stories from the 50s.
That, yeah, I was going to say, or like later than that, that yes. Might be a little bit more current, where it's like, if you're, you know, a man of color walking around with these two young white children, that, you know, people are going to look at that kind of. So yeah, I would think early 1900s, that could be risky. And so the fact that he did, that's, he must be well respected or well known enough in town that people probably would just not assume that of him, but who knows?
Or maybe even just brave enough, right? Because who's going to send out two little girls to walk home by themselves, you know? So maybe yeah. Even if he was taking a risk, maybe he just is the kind of guy who will take that risk because he's a good person. I will say too, I did refer to both, I think we both referred to the girls as white. And I think in this time period, and I could be wrong, Nellie maybe wouldn't have been considered white at that time as an Irish immigrant, because they were very ostracized and often discriminated against. And I think, again, this is where I'm kind of fuzzy, but race is such a social construct. And I think potentially at that time she wouldn't have been considered white, but I would have to look more into that. Okay, so back to the story. This chapter ends with the two girls making it back safely. Samantha puts on her nightgown and falls asleep with Lydia tucked in beside her. And we'll go into chapter 6 now, our final chapter, and it begins with Samantha trying to reach Nellie through their tin can telephone, but Nellie doesn't answer. While she's searching for Nellie, Eddie shows up and casually tells her that Nellie's leaving. She's being sent back to the city because she's too sick to work. He adds that his mother said next time they'll get an immigrant woman who lasts longer. Disgusted, Samantha shoves his chewing gum into his hair.
Another point for Samantha.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was her just basically saying, no, Eddie, you don't run things here.
Right.
Don't be rude. And I know. Just walk away. Boss.
I loved that. So Samantha rushes to the Rylands' kitchen and finds Nellie there quietly packing. Nellie says she isn't actually sick, just still coughing sometimes from her time at the factory, and Mrs. Ryland doesn't want the bother. She's also worried that Nellie will eventually become sick and won't be able to work. So Samantha asks if Nellie will have to go back to the factory, and Nellie starts to cry. She tries to reassure Samantha that she'll be fine, but she's clearly heartbroken. Samantha runs to Mrs. Hawkins for help, asking if they can send Nellie off with some food. And I don't know about you, but I was hoping that Samantha was running to like see if Nellie could stay with them, but that's not the case.
It's like, no, we're going to just make her travels a little bit easier. Right. We're going to bring her a pillow, some food, you know. And
I guess it's better than nothing.
It is. I thought it was sweet.
Mrs. Hawkins does fill a basket with pie, fruit, ham, and canned goods, and then Samantha adds Lydia, her new doll, to the basket, giving it to Nellie.
Wow.
I know. Wow.
Now, I have to ask, Grace, I remember you, I think I was seeing you read the story, and there was a portion of that time period that you were reading, that I knew you were reading this book, that you got a little emotional? Was it this point?
Yes.
When she gave the doll?
When she gave the doll, and then just like her waiting for the driver with Nelly. It just made me so sad because I just thought how heavy that room must feel with these two girls knowing not only that they have to say goodbye, but just like the dread and worry of what might happen to Nelly once she leaves. Like, yeah, I'm like tearing up right now talking
about it. I know, don't cry.
So later that evening, Cornelia and Uncle Gard visit, but Samantha is furious at all the grown-ups and keeps to herself working on her sampler. Eventually, she explodes, blurting out that she knows why Jesse left, that she had a baby. Samantha confesses everything, including sneaking out with Nelly. Grandmary is clearly concerned, but instead of scolding her, she pauses and admits she should have told Samantha the truth. Samantha asks if Jesse could come back and have her baby come with her, and Grandmary surprises her by actually considering it. Then she asks where Samantha's doll is. When Samantha says she lost her, Grandmary begins to scold her until Uncle Gard steps in and says Mrs. Hawkins told him what really happened. Grandmary is clearly moved and proud. Samantha runs into her arms and begs her to help Nellie's family. Grandmary throws back her head and laughs, then says yes, they can help Nellie. The book ends with Grandmary hugging Samantha.
Oh, what a story. I have to say that I understand now why she is so beloved, I think, Samantha.
Yeah.
Because to me, it's one thing to be loud and boisterous and a presence in a room, but you can do all the talking and all the moving, but just because you're moving doesn't mean you're creating motion, right? Like, it doesn't mean that you're creating progress just by all the things that you're saying, or, you know, like, there's got to be some action that matches where it is you want things to go. And so the fact that she was able to stand up to someone as formidable as Grandmary, do it so unapologetically herself, and to do it like it festered in her long enough where like there was no holding back, and so she almost kind of like let go of all restraints at the best time possible, but did it in a way that was like driven out of only an innocent need to help. And so the fact that she was able to let go and just, you know, speak to this strong presence such as Grandmary and say, listen, it's not right that you didn't tell me where Jesse went. Like, I should have known. And then the fact that, you know, Grandmary like was like, you know what? Shoot, you're right. maybe she could have handled that differently because I'm usually not wrong. And I also love that Uncle Gard stood up.
Yeah.
And said that what he said, because then that was like the final like notch for me to be like, okay, Grandmary is a really cool woman, because she was able to realize that, you know, she could have handled it a little bit differently, and so I will then do this to hopefully remedy maybe my past actions, which was nice to see.
Yeah, I feel like that scene says a lot about Samantha, that she's like brave enough to speak what's on her mind to her grandmother.
Yes.
But I think it says just as much about Grandmary to be willing to like admit to a mistake,
yeah,
or to a fault, which I feel like you wouldn't have assumed that about her character prior. So I really think by the end of this book, not only do you really love Samantha, but you also really love Grandmary.
Yeah, it was really, I thought that was a great ending. Really enjoyed it.
So speaking of that, what would you rate this book 1 to 5? And I just want to give a caveat here, because for me, you can rate it how you want. I know for me, I'm going to rate it for what it is, as a children's lit that is 54 pages long. And I'm going to kind of compare it to the other American Girl books or other books similar when I rate it. So like, I'm not comparing it against Moby Dick, which I've never even read, but like, you know, I'm going to give it a rating based on sort of a subjective rating.
So I don't have much knowledge of like how similarly or different the other books are written compared to this. I really enjoyed this. It was, and again, rating it as it is, I think that that's fair. I really, really liked it. I have to give it a 5.
Oh, yeah.
I have to give it a 5. I think it was, number one, it spoke to things that I definitely can identify with, of not being a person that, you know, lives the yacht life.
Mm-hmm.
you know, being a young person that has to kind of grow up a little bit faster. So I saw myself a lot in Nelly.
Yeah.
But then I also saw myself in Samantha, where, you know, there were moments where, like, I did have to stand up for myself, mm-hmm. or that I had to stand up for others. So to me, to kind of put my two experiences in life and separate them into these two characters, I thought was done in a very neat way to have it be in 54 pages.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like the fact that I teared up at the end and it was only 54 pages.
Very sweet.
Yeah, like that to me, that is good writing. If yes. you can get someone to feel, and that's what I really like about specifically children's books. I love when they have that emotion, but then also have a hopefulness to it, which I totally feel like this book is has heavy topics in it, but overall it feels hopeful because it ends hopeful.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely true to, I think, the time that, you know, it could cover an important topic, but do it in a way that potentially could be more digestible for a kid.
Yeah.
You know, that's in elementary school who's reading this book.
Something I like about the American Girl books in general is that I feel like the majority of them are focusing on a girl from that time period who's just kind of living a normal life. Now, Samantha's very wealthy, but other than that, like, she doesn't have a big part of, like, history. Like, she's not, like, I don't know.
That we know. She could eventually become, who knows, Alice Roosevelt's secretary or, like, assistant, and then she's living this wild life.
Maybe someday. I would love to see that for Samantha. But I just mean, like, yeah, like every American girl, I think more or less, like, I haven't read them all, but they are just living sort of a life that I think a lot of kids can identify with, even though it's in a completely different time period. And there's sometimes really heavy things going on. So yeah. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm very excited about this next part because I'm going to show you the dolls. Okay. So first, take a look at this girl.
Is that Nelly?
Yeah.
What? They made a Nelly doll?
Yeah.
Isn't hold she on. Cute? Hold on. Wait. I didn't know that they made a doll on Nelly. I thought Samantha was like the girl, and so they only made a doll on the American Girl, but they made one on Nelly too?
Yes.
I love that.
So I will say I have both Samantha and Nelly, and I have them here with me so that Victor can see them.
Yeah. Wow.
And Nelly, so Samantha was released first in the late 80s,
okay.
or I want to say 1986, and then Nelly wasn't released, I want to say, until 2001-ish. And so this was like called the Best Friend line that they came out with later on.
Interesting.
So she was not original with Samantha, but her and then a few other like side characters in books were released in the early 2000s.
Do they have a Eddie doll?
They do not, and I don't know that good. He would have sold very well.
He would
well.
Look a lot like Thunder.
So yeah, Nelly is one of my favorite dolls. I think she's so cute. She has like a short blondish reddish haircut.
I would say more blonde with about 10% red.
Yeah. It's red is the wrong word. I don't really know what how to describe it, but
auburn ish
maybe.
Is that still red? I don't
I picture auburn darker, but like a light, almost like a strawberry blonde, I guess. And then she has blue eyes, and I love her freckles. They're mm-hmm. so cute. And she has a Josefina face mold. And yeah, I just think she's so cute. And then I also have Samantha,
the one and only. I've heard so much, but now having read the story, it's like, okay, Samantha, you're it, girl.
And Samantha has the classic face mold and brown eyes. And I'll go into further detail with Katie on the dolls, but just give me your opinion, Victor. If you had a right level of cuteness, what would you rate Nelly on a scale of 1 to 5?
For the doll?
Yeah.
I would give Nelly a 5.
Oh, okay.
She's cute.
So cute. Yep. What would you give Samantha? And I will say, be careful because... so shoot. Okay, I have to give a disclaimer. So be careful because so many people, she's their favorite. But disclaimer to the audience that I have a Samantha that is most likely from the 90s. And I think her face paint needs to be touched up. And she's in fairly good... I got her secondhand. She's in fairly good condition, but like... she probably could use a little love. So Victor, what would you rate her?
I'm so happy that you threw out that disclaimer because it's no offense to Samantha and all the fans of Samantha. I would say this doll, honestly, it seems like her dress would fit more the Nelly doll.
So she, Samantha is wearing her play dress. It's like the blue and white one. This is actually the dress she wears in the very first chapter when she scrapes her knee. So it's a play, it's a dress that you play in.
Gotcha, that's why
it's not super fancy.
Yeah, so for this Samantha doll, I would give, and I'm going to do it like from what I'm seeing, but also from, I think, images of other dolls and dresses. Like for this, this one's like,
it's okay, just be honest.
3.5
3.5
Maybe 4
I was surprised you gave it that high.
Oh, just really?
Okay, I will say, I'm going to throw you under the bus for a second. I did ask Victor which doll of all of mine he thought was ugliest, and he said Samantha.
Oh, that's right. And you were like, no, she's like the most popular one. There's, you know,
but she's, listen, cuter in this outfit. Maybe.
I am. Listen, I don't care what she looks like, what she wears. From the story that I just read, I'm team Samantha.
Yeah, there you
all
go.
The way.
That influenced your rating a little bit, which is more than fine.
Yes.
All right. Well, we have one last thing before we move on to more doll discussion with Katie. And Victor, do you have some media that you would pair with this, like a movie, book, something that if someone was reading this book, they could then move on to this next thing to get more of this sort of world or vibe or whatever?
Yes. So the one that came to mind is The Boy in the Striped Pajamas.
Oh.
Very sad story. I don't want to give too much away, but essentially this story entails the collision of two different worlds where there's a boy that lives in a house where a Nazi general, he's the son of a Nazi general, and he goes up to this fence in his backyard that is essessentially a fenced in concentration camp where he befriends a boy in a striped pajama who happens to be a young boy, young Jewish boy in a concentration camp, and they communicate so innocently, they become best friends, where to me it was like probably the closest thing that I could come up with that I know that I've really enjoyed, as far as like I that's one of my favorite movies, I think, or like one I really enjoyed. Sad, super heavy topic. But what I enjoyed most about this Samantha story was kind of like that collision of that wealthy background to, hey, no, I'm actually working, making $1 a week. And almost like bringing those two worlds together through an innocent act such as making a friend. Very different ending. I'm glad this one ended way happier. But if you haven't seen Boy in a Striped Pajamas, I think there's at least that part as far as these two young people connecting to each other despite their difference in background.
Okay. Yeah. So not the same time period, but maybe similar, some similar content in the relationships. Yeah. In the friendship.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I have not seen that movie and I plan to hopefully never see that movie if I'm being honest, like no shade to that movie,
sad.
But
it's very sad.
Well, okay. And on that note, we are going to move over to, talking with Katie more about the dolls, snacks, and crafts. Hey, Katie.
Hello.
So did you read Meet Samantha?
I did. It was so nostalgic.
Did you remember a lot of it?
I do remember it starting off with Eddie making fun of Samantha and her falling out of the tree. I feel like that's a very momentous start to a book. And I do remember that she was a little mischievous and always getting, not in trouble per se, but like just misunderstood by the adults around her and just trying to do good. So I feel like rereading it was really a treat.
Yes, I didn't remember a ton either, but just knew that I liked it. Like, I remember her books and Molly's were my favorites, and I didn't remember exactly why, but I feel like rereading, I was like, oh, yeah, like, these are well-written. I can see why I liked them. She's a good character.
Great character. And I feel like when I was a kid, I really gravitated towards her story in particular, and I don't remember why, but then rereading it as an adult, I was like, she's such, like, a friend to all these people around her and just exemplifies friendship in like the story. And so I think that was just something that I really appreciated. And I forgot the sequence of events when she meets Nelly and all of those things, but I think it was just a good just jump back into the American Girl world.
Yeah, and I think I also was, I think I said this to Victor, but sometimes I think she gets a bad reputation for being spoiled because she was wealthy. And so I think people forget that actually in the book, she's a really, I feel like, good character and makes a lot of great decisions and is fairly altruistic. And like you said, is a great friend. So it was fun to read that and be reminded of her strong character morals.
Yeah, and definitely privileged. But I think yes. The book even acknowledges that sense of privilege throughout, which is such a great lesson for like younger generations to start kind of easing their way into those heavier topics. But then I also think like she did have to work to get her doll too. Yes. So it's not like she doesn't know, I think, the value of things. And I think especially at the end of the book, I mean, that's really spoiler. The moral of the story here is that she does have good morals and actions speak louder than words with her little, you know, cross stitch going throughout the book there too. But I think that's really something that she does get, I think, that rap for being a spoiled rich girl.
Yes.
And she's rich and she, I think, uses that privilege to benefit others too.
Yeah. And I think the book also shows some examples of her learning and reflecting on her privilege, which Absolutely. Is also nice to see, because I think anyone who is reading this who maybe has a background that comes with some privileges, I think especially kids, it's nice to see these examples of how you might be able to reflect on your own circumstances and how you could use your privileges potentially for the better versus not even acknowledging them, right?
At any age.
Yes, yeah. Totally. Okay, so what would you like overall rate it? What did you think about it?
I would 5-star it. I mean, it was just, I think, so nostalgic for me to jump back into that story and then really just, I think, falling back in love with the character that I fell in love with as a kid. So
yeah, we gave it 5 stars too, both of us. Okay, so now let's dive into a media pairing for this. And Victor shared his when we talked. And so I'm going to go ahead and share mine for Meet Samantha. And I felt like kind of an obvious book / movie that goes with this is A Little Princess. Have you watched that or read it?
My sister was in a play for A Little Princess in middle school, but I don't quite remember the plot.
Did you? You watched it, though? You went to see her?
I went to see her.
Do you remember what character she played?
I want to say she was the maid.
Okay, if she was like there's a best friend maid named Becky who's like a main character.
Okay.
Is that, or if it was like an adult maid then.
I want to say she was the adult maid.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't remember that character very well, but that's fun though.
Reaching way far back into my memory.
It's such a cute, disclaimer, I have not read the book. I do own it. It's on my bucket list of books to read. But I've watched the 1995 movie and it is so good. It's such a big part of my childhood. I loved that movie. I haven't watched it recently, so I don't know for sure if it holds up, but I feel like I've heard it does. So hopefully it's still good. But it's about this little girl who is very privileged, very wealthy, just like Samantha. It's the book was written in 1905, so very much the same similar time period. And she ends up going to a school, like a boarding school, basically, because her dad, I think, is in the war. I haven't watched this in so long, so I might be getting some of the details wrong. But she goes there and, you know, is like a paying student and has this like beautiful room and a lot of toys. And like, again, very privileged, even in this boarding house. But then they get news that her dad was killed in combat. And so now she has no money to pay for her tuition. She's been orphaned. So again, similar to Samantha, just that being orphaned aspect, although she does not have a grandmother to go to. So she ends up, they end up keeping her at this school. But instead of being a student now, she is regulated to the attic to be a servant. So she has to sort of relearn how to exist in the world in her new position and how to exist among these girls who she used to be like equals with, and now they don't see her that way. And it's really, really good. And I'm not going to spoil what all happens, but there's also some fantastical elements, and it's just she has a rich imagination that plays into the story. So it's got a lot of beautiful imagery and it's great. So yeah, A Little Princess is a really, in my opinion, similar movie, just in sort of like the time period and some of the vibes. I feel like if you like Meet Samantha, there's a good chance you would also enjoy the movie. And I'm assuming the book too. I just can't speak firsthand. Okay, so let's go into the doll review. I'm going to give a little bit of background first, and then we'll kind of go into our thoughts. And also, I know we've talked a little bit about your history with Samantha.
Absolutely.
In our previous episode, but we can kind of dive a little bit more into that too. So, okay. So I wrote down some sort of details about her. First, let's go into her like general appearance and her outfit. So she's got long brown hair. It does have some curl to it. It's styled in like a half up with a ribbon. And she is actually one of the only dolls to have decal brown eyes. And what that means is like her eyes are brown and they look sort of like they're painted. So sometimes she gets confused for just like you, number 13. They look very similar. But if you look at that doll, they have like a swirl pattern in their eye. So most dolls have like a swirl pattern. So that's just like one kind of random detail about Samantha that makes her more unique. And then another doll she often gets mistaken for is Molly, because they are very similar, but Molly has gray eyes. But I've seen people like have Molly dressed up in Samantha's Me outfit saying like, oh, I have a Molly or a Samantha for sale. And then people will have to say, actually, no, that's a Molly. So they do look fairly similar. I have heard that when these first three dolls were introduced, Molly, Samantha, and Kirsten, the place that made the dolls only could do like a certain hairstyle with bangs.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So partly why I think they look similar. And then some other things about Samantha is that she has gone through some slight variations throughout the, you know, however long she's been available for, over 30 years. And so she is a doll that if you purchase her secondhand, or she is now right now available in stores as well, there's so many different sort of like versions of her that you might end up getting. I don't, what year would your doll have been from again?
I got her in 2006. So
okay.
Mid 2000s.
Okay. I feel like I typically like the molds that were out at that time.
Yes.
Because there's some, like, I have a mid 90s version, which I meant to bring her to show you, but I forgot, and I will bring her next time. Yes. But I don't really love my version. Okay. She's not from, you know, my childhood. She's secondhand, so I don't also have, like, a necessarily, like, nostalgic attachment to her. Yeah. But she, I think, like, the ones in the 90s, this is what I read on Reddit, is that they tend to have, like, less makeup. So she's a little bit faded and washed out, and I think also from time, right?
Yes.
And then also her bangs are super long. Like, I think longer than a lot of other Samanthas. So her eyes are sort of like half covered.
Samantha needs a trim, I'm hearing.
I know. And if I had any confidence whatsoever in my abilities, I would try, but I do not. So I'm not going to try. I've just tried to sort of like style her hair a little bit and push it back.
Trip to the American Girl Doll Hospital Salon.
That's true. I know.
Order.
I know. I feel like I need to do something because I will maybe try to touch up her face paint a little bit. Yeah. So that is sort of on my like list of things to try. I did get her for a very good price, so I'm not too worried about like messing her up too much. So
Samantha gets a makeover, book number 7.
Yes. What? Okay. So do you want to go into like what you remember from her outfit?
Yes. So I'm looking at a picture here and it's exactly what I had. But she has this like maroon, burgundy, and gray plaid pattern. I don't know if it's exactly plaid because it's kind of pretty even. With the pleated skirt, the locket necklace, she's got that ribbon around her waist and that shiny burgundy satin with black tights. She had bloomers and then she had really shiny black Mary Janes. I did not have all of the accessories, which I was really sad about as a kid. So I did have the Samantha that came with just the matching bow in that like checked pattern. And then my sister's doll, very similar with that like Molly Samantha haircut. And so Samantha's hair was just way curlier and cuter and shinier, in my opinion. But
wait, which doll did your sister have?
She had the...
Like a girl of the year?
No, it was the like Just Like You dolls.
Okay.
And she had one of the ones that just looked very similar to Samantha. Yeah. I think her eyes were blue.
Oh, okay.
Instead of brown.
Yep.
But they had basically the same hair. But I digress. So I really loved her hat. I think that was the accessory I was most sad not to have because it's just so cute. It's like that burgundy suede hat with the pink ribbons. And it just added so much, I think, to the outfit. And it's also classic with her really just carrying that hat around on the cover of each book. And I do think I had the Samantha's World version of the book and not the Meet Samantha version. The same illustration on the cover. It's slightly different.
You had like the, like without the parchment background, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
It still had the parchment background, but it was an updated illustration.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So
I see what you're saying. Like the in between the whoever illustrated Samantha's World, Welcome to Samantha's World, is the illustrator you had.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yes. There's a few. I think there's at least a couple illustrators for her.
Do some digging.
I think that would make sense given the time period that you had her, that you would have a different illustrator than what I grew up with. And then the book that Victor and I read, I believe, is the original illustrator for our version, which personally I prefer, but I think that's just because that's what I'm familiar with. I'm sure you probably prefer the other one. So
I do. It's all the nostalgia. It's like everything
about her meet outfit. There's a YouTuber, and if people listening are big into the American Girl community, you probably know of her. Her name is Lady Rebecca Fashions, and she goes over the American Girl dolls and their outfits and how historically accurate they are or are not. And in this case, she says that Samantha's meet outfit is not super accurate because it is not as frilly as it would have been for an upper class girl, among a few other things that she mentioned. So, if you're looking at her outfit and wondering, it's funny because when I showed Victor Samantha in her one of her play outfits and then I showed him Nelly, he thought their outfits should be switched because Samantha's were a little bit more sort of like plain than Nelly's was. So yeah, I think like maybe having it be a little bit frillier. Before we were on, Katie was talking about how like the birthday outfit seems a little bit more of like what you would expect. It's a little bit frillier.
Yeah. And I do remember switching a lot of Nellie and Samantha's clothes when I played with them because Nellie's were always more frilly. They just looked more historically accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Nellie's collection a lot. I like Samantha's too, though. And we're going to get into more of Samantha's collections as we read through the books. Today, we're just really talking about the meet outfit and then a couple, I think one other we'll discuss real quick, but a couple of more things about her meet outfit before we move on to the second outfit I wanted to talk about today is that in the back of the book, the peek into the past section, did you read those as a kid, the peek into the past sections?
I did not. I think I just ended the book and then I did the same thing when I reread it. So I did not.
That's okay. I am the same as you. And the only reason I read it this time is for the podcast because I knew I wanted to try to get some like tidbits from there, but I also skipped that when I was younger.
It's the small text. It just throws me off. I'm like, this isn't a part of the book.
And I think too, they probably could have, I don't know, the pictures are, I think, in black and white typically. Like, I don't know, like it could be cuter, I guess, to draw a child's attention and me as an adult. But from that section, I did learn that to be more historically accurate, instead of wearing tights, which is what Samantha's doll comes with, she should probably be wearing stockings with a garter because that was more typical of what she would be wearing in that time period.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the final thing I want to mention is that her outfit is only on the cover of the book. So it is actually not at all inside the book, which I didn't know that until I was reading it. And I was like, okay, when is she going to wear her meat outfit? And it is not in the book at all. Did you notice that when you were reading?
I did. And there were a few other dresses where I was like, they should have turned that outfit into one of the, you know, collections versus some of these other ones. But
I know. I think that's the thing with all of these girls. It's like they missed out, I think, on some great options.
So many outfits.
Yes. As far as I know, and I could be wrong, but from this first book, the two that were made into outfits are her meet outfit from the cover and then the play outfit, which is the one that she's wearing when she skins her knee. And I do have that one. I got it in a lot, which I feel very lucky for. Like it was in an Addie lot. And I was like, hey, that's Samantha's play outfit. Cool.
It does look like something Addie would wear, though, too.
That's what she was wearing when I bought her. And I was like, okay, I can see like how this would fit her. But yeah, so I have that now for Samantha as well. And the play outfit was also mentioned by Lady Rebecca Fashions on YouTube. And she says this actually would have been just about right for a school uniform during that time. So again, maybe not perfectly accurate for how it was used in the book, but would have been more accurate for a school uniform.
And that's what it looks like to me. I mean, she looks like she's ready to have some books in hand. I'm curious. I'm looking at a picture of this play dress right now. Does she have tights or stockings with the play outfit?
Good question. When I got it, it did not come with either because it was okay. like secondhand. But I'm assuming it comes with stocking or tights, I would guess. Yeah,
the picture I'm looking at has stockings, which oh. is interesting.
Okay.
Given the just...
Me outfit did it.
Well, the me outfit has the tights. The play outfit has the stockings, but she rips her tights in the first chapter of
so
the book.
So it should have just been
so
flipped.
So should have been flipped.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I do... She might have her stockings... I'm trying to remember now. I'm not very good at keeping track of all that. I know I do have some stockings and I do have some tights for Nellie and Samantha's collection. And I don't remember who belongs to
who
what.
Who has what? Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, that is interesting. Which outfit do you prefer?
The cover outfit is so classic. It's iconic. It's iconic. Yeah. I mean, when I think of American Girl, I think of that maroon burgundy box and I think of Samantha's outfit. That is my classic American Girl like go-to.
I wonder if they picked the burgundy color from Samantha. I feel like that would make sense.
And I mean, Molly and Kirsten also have red details in their outfits too. So they all kind yeah. of had this thorough line. Of,
yes.
Through line of
some
red.
Yeah. One more thing I wanted to ask. Have you seen Samantha's Be Forever outfit?
I have.
What are your thoughts?
I like it. I think it looks like I had... one of Nellie's dresses that was pink.
I have that dress.
It is so cute. And Samantha's Be Forever outfit looks a lot like it. So I think, honestly, out of all the newer Samantha models, the Samantha Be Forever outfit is kind of my favorite. And I think it just ties in some more of the pink that's in her handbag from before.
Yeah.
I don't like it as much as the check. Gingham. I mean, that's just a classic pattern, but I do think it is a little bit more historically accurate to the times, and I do think it's overall a very cute dress.
Yeah, I like the Be Forever as well. I think it's cute, and I like both.
Yeah,
I will say, so I did not have this as a child. Getting it as an adult, I got the dress separate from the doll. So I purchased the doll, like I said, for a really good price on Facebook Marketplace. But she came with like an off-brand dress. And so then I purchased the dress from another seller on Facebook Marketplace for another really good price. And I was a little underwhelmed at the material, which I should check mm-hmm. to see what year it's from, because that might make the difference. Because I feel like, you know, I have Kirsten, who's like the re-release. I have like a newer version of her and her stuff feels really nice. And I feel like I have some other older Pleasant Company stuff, like Addie's nightgown feels really nice and luxurious. And I felt like Samantha's was a little like sort of that shiny feeling and thin. Ooh. So I need to look. I should have done this before we recorded, but I'll mention it in the next episode what year her dress was from. But I should look to see, because maybe it's like a later version that isn't as high of quality as potentially the earlier versions. But I was a little underwhelmed, but I do like the dress. I like the visual. I think it's very cute.
And I remember mine being thin because it was like cotton. There wasn't any like undergarments or anything attached to it. Like Kirsten's skirt, I think, had like an underskirt.
Layers. Yeah.
Layers. Whereas Samantha's just had the bloomers separately.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it too.
That might play into it. Yeah. And I did forget that actually in this one, in book one, they show her nightgown. So I don't know if you remember there in the book, there's like an yes. image with her armoire and then there's her nightgowns lined up. Her nightgown is so cute. Like I would totally, I don't know. I feel like it would be so cozy to wear that.
I know. I didn't have any of the American Girl, like dress like your American Girl doll outfits as a kid. I just wasn't into that. But I do think the nightgown would have been like the one thing I would have chosen, which is so strange. Like Samantha's nightgown or Kirsten's nightgown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're very similar vibes.
Very
like
similar.
One is blue and one
is
pink.
It just looks so cozy.
Yes. And if it's anything like Addie's feels so nice. I'm going to bring it in for you when we discuss Addie, but it's just so soft and like thick and just feels like such high quality that I'm imagining Samantha's feels the same. I will say Samantha's nightgown, I don't own it yet, but I plan to, because it, I think, was so popular. It's very easy to find at very good prices. So I'm just going to wait for it to come up in like my local Facebook Marketplace and snatch one. It also comes with like a robe, like a pink robe thing that goes yes. over it, which is also fun and a nice added detail.
Samantha's collection is just luxury.
I think. So fun. There's also, okay. There's a tea outfit that she has that I love, and it's on my list. If you look up Samantha tea outfit, And it sort of looks like the outfit she wears in the illustration where she's talking to Jesse when Jesse says she's leaving. So kind of like later on in the book. And I love that outfit. It's on like the top of my list to get for her.
That's so Victorian and so Samantha.
Yes. And it's just so pretty and very Samantha. And I love, I'm like a tea girl. I love tea parties. I love tea. So I feel like having her tea outfit I need. So I don't know if like that illustration is supposed to be that or if there's going to be one down the line from another book that is a better representation. But I felt like it looked similar. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about from this book, as far as like extras, is that you could also purchase the Lydia doll. So I don't know if you remember that from your childhood, if you had it or if you'd ever seen it. But like the Lydia doll that she gives Nellie, you could purchase a little version of that.
I knew that as a kid. I never had it.
Did you? Was there anything that we talked about today that you remember wanting and not having? Or did you feel pretty satisfied with what you had?
I could have had every outfit and not have been satisfied as a kid. Let's be honest. But I do think out of all of the historical characters, Samantha's was the one where I wanted pretty much every single outfit that existed. So I think anything from her collection I would have gladly taken in addition to what I had.
You liked her collection the best. Yeah. Okay. So now let's move on to cooking our like recipes. So you made something for this episode, Katie. What did you make?
I did. So out of Samantha's cookbook, there is a nut sandwich. It sounds so basic. So the recipe itself is in a small mixing bowl, mix cream cheese and chopped walnuts. So very basic. I was short on time. I was trying to find one of those easy recipes. But I also modified it. So it's supposed to go on bread and you're supposed to cut off the crust and cut it into four dainty triangles, which is very tea party-esque.
Yes.
But I went very grocery shopping light this week and needed breakfast. So I bought cinnamon swirl bagels.
Yum.
And I put the cream cheese on the bagel with walnut. And then I also added a little bit of honey because I just felt like that was missing from this recipe. So I did modify it quite a bit, but yummiest breakfast I've had in a while.
Oh, good.
Yes. It was so basic, but the honey and the cream cheese together, I've had honey walnut cream cheese that Philadelphia just makes.
Yum.
But making it like yourself, homemade myself, just elevated it. And then doing it on a bagel
was a good choice.
Chef's kiss.
And you toasted the bagel?
I did.
Did you put the walnuts, like sprinkle them on top, or did you stir them in to the cream cheese?
I just sprinkled on top. I was really being lazy with this recipe. I'm not gonna lie, I am, and you will learn throughout this podcast, just a quick hack chef. I do not love cooking. I am a one bowl recipe type of girl, and so nut sandwiches sounded like an easy breakfast, and so I modified it. I think it would be good by itself without the recipe modification, especially for a tea party. Super light, super easy. You could even mix honey in with it, I think, to make it just a little bit sweeter, I guess. But would definitely go well with tea party food. So overall, I gave the cost a 5. Super easy recipe. Easy to find the ingredients.
And not very many ingredients.
Not many at all. It was 3. Which is my type of thing. One knife needed. And then I did the ease 5. The way I made it, and I think the way it's made.
You probably even were harder because of the toaster.
I think I took it a step further. So I think just if you wanted to toast your bread, that would work too. And taste was 5. I'm a bagel girl. And yeah, so me too. Cream cheese, walnut, honey on a bagel, cinnamon bagel. I will be eating that for the rest of the week.
And I feel like, you know, cream cheese on a bagel. Yes, it's delicious. We all know that. But I don't know that I ever would have just like had the thought to put walnuts and honey with it.
No.
But yeah, even though they make that cream cheese, and I know that it's a good combo, but that's such a good idea. And I feel like your modification, it's nice that you did that, because then it just gives more creative ways to use these recipes that are pretty basic overall.
And I never would have thought to put nuts on my bagels either. But now I'm like, ooh, I could make, you know, like a peanut butter pecan bagel, or really doctor up my bagel game in the morning.
Yes, I love that. That should be, I mean, I know we have a lot of bagel shops, but I feel like they need to some of them need to step it up and maybe have some more creative options, because it's usually
especially in the cream cheese world.
Yes, I agree. And now I didn't cook something for this episode, but I did do a craft. So I made the glass paperweight, which in the book, in the craft book, it's like a glass, like literally like a little glass that's turned upside down over a piece of sort of cardboard paper with felt glued over it. And then there's like a satin ribbon sort of tied or like glued around the edge. And then inside the glass, it's sort of like a snow globe type thing where there's seashells and other nature things inside. And it's supposed to be used like a paperweight. I also did sort of a little bit of a modification because I didn't really want to go and buy a glass specifically for this. And like, I wasn't going to use a glass that we use for drinking, but I do have a lot, like almost everyone else, probably I have a lot of random jars, like mason jars and
it's things a great like, idea.
Yes. And I will say mason jar didn't work perfectly because, or like jam jars, 'cause they usually have like some etching on them. So I ended up finding one glass jar that worked perfect. It was from the company American Spoon, which is a more local company in Michigan. Very delicious. And I think it was like a raw honey jar, probably, if I had to guess. But the glass was smooth. And so I used that and created like a little fall scene because, you know, it's fall. And I will be probably giving this to my daughter in her like boo basket for decor for her room. So I put like a little autumn fairy in the middle, and I put some like fake moss, and I did do felt, but instead of like the cardboard, I just had it on the lid of the jar. And then I did do some ribbon on the outside. The hardest part was that, because the ribbon wasn't like the right width, so it kind of like looks not very great. And then also I used super glue, which you can see through the ribbon, so like I tried to cover it up with another piece of like ribbon. That's like the part that didn't work out great, but I feel like inside the jar is really cute. So overall, I would give this one the cost. I would give it probably a 3, because I think it could be a 1 or it could be a 5. It just depends on like what you choose to make.
Inside.
Yes. I think based on like the instructions, it could be a 5, because like if I had just used rocks I found outside, or like they use seashells.
Yeah.
Like stuff you have, like you could probably just find most of it in your home. And like I did have the glass jar in my home, but again, I wanted to make like a specific vibe. Like I wanted to do a fall scene. So I did go to Michael's and I bought some stuff. It was on sale. I think for everything I paid $17, which I would never spend $17 on this. Like if this was ready made. Yes. However, a lot of the stuff, there's a ton left over. So if I wanted to make a second one, it would probably cost me like $4 to make. Yeah. So, you know, and I can use this for fall decor and other things like the leftover. So I feel like in actuality, it probably costs less than $10 given the materials I used. I would say like a 3. For ease, I would say a 4. I would say it was pretty easy. But again, there's just some tricky parts with like how to glue certain things. I also found that the super glue didn't work on the glass, because I tried to glue some leaves to the glass and it did not work. I'd give that a 4. And then usability, I would give a 5, because I think it's cute. And I feel like it's like cute. Like you're not going to use it, but you can have it as decor and something cute to look at. So I guess you could use it as a paperweight. I don't think my 2-year-old will be using it that way. But let me show you a quick picture.
And now your daughter needs fairy jars for all seasons. So
I honestly was thinking
you need some more jars, Grace.
I know. I need to go back to American Spoon, apparently.
That is so cute. You'll have to check out our social media to see Grace's craft of the week.
Yes. And maybe if I think of it, I'll include some other things that I'll be giving her for her boo basket. So if any other parents are out there and want to do a similar thing or make your own boo basket for yourself, you can see what that looks like. But yeah, I'll share a picture, and we'll share a picture of Katie's bagel as well, so you can see what that looked like. And that is everything for Meet Samantha. As I said, I'm excited. Her collection is so great. So I am excited to keep going through the book so we can talk about more of her outfits and more of her collection. But for now, you know, I think there was a lot even to talk about just with this first book.
Absolutely. Excited to jump in.
Yeah, thanks. All right. And we hope you tune in to a future episode soon.